You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely up?
They're saying I should think stuff.
Something is wrong with me.
Practice.
Welcome back to, or not even welcome back, you're just welcoming to a new episode of Positive Cynicism, where we are continuing our year-end look at Star Wars fandom with the release of The Last Jedi. Well, as I record this, The Last Jedi comes out in about 24 hours, and while my guest last week, Stan Young, had already seen the movie and actually has seen it twice now since we recorded, he gave it his thumbs up. My guest tonight, welcoming back to his third appearance on Positive Cynicism, Eric Bennett, and I have not seen Last Jedi, but we do have tickets for the first showing at the famed Man's Chinese, which really isn't Man's Chinese, it's now TCL Chinese, but it will always be Man's Chinese Theater in our hearts.
Always.
We will be attending the first screening there on the 14th, which when you hear this will have already happened. And then there's some sort of after-party geek celebration that I'm not too sure of all the details. I'm sure Eric will fill us in as we record. But what we're looking at this time, whereas on the last episode, Stan and I looked at how Star Wars fandom has been a thing for the last 40 years and what keeps driving people forward with their fandom, Eric and I are going to be taking a look at the current product of Star Warsness, and Star Warsness isn't even a word, but I just coined it. So
sure, sure.
It'll be the 2018 word of the year. But we're going to look at fans now with this new, with everything that Disney has going on with taking control of Star Wars. So let me stop babbling. Let's get into the show. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back.
How are things going?
Very good. I'm a little under the weather, but we have a big group tomorrow to see the movie, and I want to talk about the movie, so this is a perfect place to be.
Yeah, and you know, because we're recording before we see the movie, there will be no Last Jedi spoilers on this episode.
Not one.
I have yet to see a trailer or any commercial thing, so I know nothing about this movie going into it. If we spoil anything, it will only be speculation.
So I shouldn't touch on that, because you haven't seen any of it.
I would prefer to stay away, but we'll see what the conversation goes.
Let's keep it as fresh as we can.
And this one is mainly going to be leading up to Last Jedi, so mm-hmm. We'll go from there. So let's start, not at the beginning, but, you know, as Stan and I discussed, Star Wars, the original trilogy, came out between 77 and 83, and then for 15 years, there was nothing. For about 10 years, there was no Star Wars until they started doing the Timothy Zahn books, which led to like a book a week, it seemed like. And the action figures were re-released in 1995. And then I believe it was around 1996, 97, George Lucas comes out and says, "Hey guys, I'm going to make a new Star Wars trilogy." Or at least that's the way that I've heard this story has been told. Because I don't know if those movies ever came out. Rimshot, I need a sound effect here. No, but Lucas came out, so he was going to do a Star Wars prequel trilogy that would show us the origins of Darth Vader and introduce us to what the Jedis were doing before they were wiped out. Where were you in 1996, 97 when this was announced, and what were your initial reactions?
I was in Seattle, and like I think a lot of people, the franchise had kind of died. You know, I was older, so I wasn't collecting action figures anymore. I wasn't reading the books. I considered all those older movies like Church, and they were kind of untouchable. But then I heard he was making new ones, and based on the other three, I thought, this is an amazing thing. I actually couldn't believe it. There was such a long time in between. So I was in Seattle when this was announced. I don't remember getting too worked up like I am about this particular movie, The Last Jedi, other than me and my brother and some friends, which we can get into later, went to go see it at Neptune at midnight. I think Seattle had some kind of world record for waiting for The Phantom Menace. We kind of set records for that, waiting for those type of movies. But I don't remember being particularly crazy about it up until about the week leading up to it. Because it was kind of dead within me, because it was dead for so long.
Okay. So did you camp out?
No.
Overnight? No?
I showed up in a rather huge line. There weren't assigned seats back then, mm-hmm. as you know. So we were 200 back in line. And it's great talking to all the fans and getting ready for it. So the hype is building in the line. And back then, I don't even know what the internet presence was on this movie. I think it was very minimal, if at all.
Well, I remember there being an MTV special about Ian Robertson, I think is his name, who was a DJ at the time, like went to Skywalker Ranch and you know, they showed some behind the scenes footage of just the work going on at the ranch. And I remember when the trailer premiered, I think it actually premiered during TRL
on MTV. Wow.
And I remember my friends taping it. And at the time I was in college and working at a student TV station, one of my friends taped it, brought it in on VHS. And I think we just sat and looped it back probably at least, I'm going to say 10 times. Just like, oh my gosh, this looks so awesome. Look at this. Look at, oh, he's got a double-edged lightsaber. This is going to be so cool. And then when the movie came out, we had our tickets. Yeah, again, no assigned seating, but you had reserve. You could buy tickets in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I think it was a midnight showing, and we got showed up about 9:30 to stand in line. And the local news station, which I was working for at the time, actually I just started, did a live shot from there, and we're standing in line with our lightsabers. And then as I told the story on the last podcast, you know, the excitement in the theater was palpable. Mm. You know, you could feel the energy. And then about halfway through the movie, when they got to the pod racing scene, power goes out in the entire theater, and we have to come back 8 hours later and finish watching the film.
That has to mean something in retrospect. Somebody was trying to tell you something.
Yeah, and I liked when Lucas announced, I was very much into it. I was excited. My fandom for Star Wars, as I have said, that's the first movie I saw. It's what made me want to work in the entertainment industry. I eat, breathe, sleeped as a child Star Wars. So mm-hmm. you're telling me that there are new movies coming out. I'm excited. And being there in the theater watching Phantom Menace, I was excited. And I forgave any flaws that I saw in the movie because it was Star Wars.
Oh, it's the same thing. There's a delusion where I saw it and I remember saying I liked it when I left. And then it wasn't more than just the second time where I was like, something's wrong. So there's this veneer of nostalgia that washes over you and all this hype and excitement. And you really kind of fool yourself. And the movie's a disaster. I mean, I've told everybody after this how much I hate that movie. It's just weird that I was older. Mm-hmm. I had to be, when did it come out?
99.
So at that point, I'm 29 years old. I'm fooling myself into thinking this is a decent movie. And there's only about 10 minutes of it that's any good. And the rest of it really doesn't work that well. So it's just strange that we all showed up. We all acted like we liked it. We got home at 2:30 in the morning. We were talking about it. And then you see it one other time and you're like, nope, there's something wrong with this. Yeah. At least for me.
Yeah, and I kind of feel the same way. I think Phantom Menace, I didn't necessarily dislike the second time I saw it when I went back the next day to use the free ticket to finish watching the film. But I remember, yeah, there was a little tinge of disappointment. We're like, oh, okay. You know, obviously Jar Jar, which comes up with anybody over the age of 25. But then, you know, 3 years later, Attack of the Clones comes out. We're right there opening night again. Excited. It's Star Wars. It's great. And that's the one out of the original trilogy I think is the worst of the three. And mainly,
I think that's the best of the original trilogy.
Because to me, it's the worst just in terms of it looks like a video game. The
For sure.
CGI oversaturation just kind of takes me out of that movie.
Yeah, I think Jar Jar gets a lot of flack, as he should, but he's not in the movies very much. He's a very quick comic relief. I think it's very unfair to pick on a child, but Jake Lloyd is a disaster. Like, yeah. Basing an entire movie around that kid and the hunky script or the hokey script, his lack of performance and experience being an actor. And again, this is a kid. I don't want to take shots at him personally, but that's what makes the movie just completely fall apart. Mm-hmm. He's in the movie a lot more than Jar Jar.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at, you know, today, the movie It, the Netflix series Stranger mm-hmm. Things, and granted, those kids are a little bit older than Jake Lloyd was in Phantom Menace, but you sense with those kids, like, they're real character, they're real people,
mm-hmm.
whereas, yes, with Jake Lloyd and then Hayden Christensen even later.
Ugh.
It's just wooden acting, which I think is a sign of George Lucas not being a good director of actors.
Oh, for sure. But I think what's interesting is I think Liam Neeson really works, and Senator Palpatine really works, and Ewan McGregor is, I think, great in it. So even with the script, and the scripts aren't great in the original Star Wars either, it isn't great either. If you get good actors, they can turn it around. When you put it in the hands of a child, you're taking chances, and CGI characters. So I think it's been very much talked about. I think it's interesting. I met a fan at a comic convention where his original trilogy was Phantom Menace and so forth. And I got an interesting perspective where he was like, I really enjoyed it. They knocked it out of the park. It totally spoke to me as a kid. I said, I don't know how Lucas did it because it didn't work for me at all. But then again, I wasn't a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought those movies are a total disaster. I mean, they don't really exist for me in the continuum of that story.
Right. And I think there's been plenty of speculation or criticism and, you know, people just hitting this idea over on the internet, especially. And, you know, you can look at the Red Letter Media website to see their reviews or breakdowns of the original trilogy or the prequel trilogy, however you want to refer to them. There is a lot that does not work. And I think part of it is a lot of contradiction to, you know, episodes 4 through 6 and what people expected to see versus what we got. And I will repeat myself from the last podcast. I will say, looking back in hindsight, you never should have seen Darth Vader, because I think his reveal kills the momentum of 4, 5, and 6 if you were to watch them in order.
I think that's a great point. I've never, ever thought about this. When I listen to your podcast, you basically say by them talking about him and then showing him, when he reveals himself in Empire Strikes Back for being Luke's dad, it doesn't mean a whole lot.
Yeah.
It completely takes the punch out of that moment. But then again, I think as we get farther away from those, the less I can't stand them. I think the thing that's frustrating is that we had to hold on to those for a long time before The Force Awakens. So you have a burden of the original, I call the original trilogy 4, 5, 6, where it's great, and then you get older, and it's like, hey, what's going on? This isn't going around anymore. I'm not worked up about it anymore. Then you get excited, and that doesn't pan out. And then there's a long period of time before Force Awakens happens. So this Star Wars thing has been a real roller coaster of quality.
Yeah.
And I think as Star Wars fans, we want to like everything Star Wars, but you have to be a little objective about where the series has been. And we can kind of say it's been 50-50 or a little bit more miss than hit. When it hits, it's fantastic. When it misses, it's really missed. But that's me trying to be objective about it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're talking about the misses. And before we get to the new trilogy, you know, you have after Revenge of the Sith, then the Cartoon Network did the Rebels cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there's another cartoon that's going on right
now. There
was
a few things. There was Tarkovsky, if I'm saying his name right, Clone Wars.
The Clone Wars, yes.
And then which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, and then there was the Clone Wars movie, animated movie, which, you know, you never hear about anymore. Like, it's, and I've never seen it. To me, it's up there with the holiday special.
Oh.
Where it's just something
that far.
Based on word of mouth, just didn't even seem like wasting the 90 minutes or 2 hours to watch it to take, and I haven't watched the Clone War cartoons or the Rebels cartoons.
Yeah, and that stuff, to be fair, is really aimed at a younger market. Not to take too many shots at Star Wars fans that like everything, but I don't really get how adults are into this stuff very much, because Star Wars has always wrestled, and this is true of the Phantom Menace and Jar Jar and all that, it's always wrestled with George Lucas wanting to pander to kids, and he keeps saying, well, Star Wars is a family movie too, and it's really not. It's a gritty, violent movie. There's death left and right. There's some violent stuff in it. And I think when he does that vision, the older fans love it, and the younger kids just suffer through it. But he's always kind of played with this thing where it's been for kids, and that's where I think it goes astray, the Ewoks being a prime example, and Phantom Menace, and young Boba Fett, and young Anakin. And those movies were a different audience. And I think we have this mixture of old fans and younger fans. And I think when you talk about Clone Wars and Rebels, I know guys that are in 40s and 50s that are watching. I'm not sure what they're getting out of it, because to me it's pretty hokey. But I understand I'm not the target audience for that movie. And I think, obviously, with Force Awakens and Last Jedi, they're trying to cover an adult audience down to kids, which is the way it used to be. So that's what's encouraging about the new reboots.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't fault them for trying to go in a different direction to tell the stories that they're not telling on the big screen.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's get into the news that Disney has bought Lucasfilm, which, you know, no one's really sure what that means at the time.
$3 or $5 billion, something like that.
It's just...
there's a lot.
All we know is George Lucas now has kind of been taken out of control of the Star Wars universe. And Disney says, okay, we're going to make episode 7, 8, 9. Based on just the fact that it's Star Wars, I think people are excited. Oh, okay, we're getting more. We're getting that continuation of the story, which anyone who has read the Timothy Zahn trilogy of books, Heir to the Empire, and the other two that I can't think of at the moment.
I haven't read those.
You haven't read those?
No, I haven't.
I would highly recommend it, because when I read those in college, it was like, these are the movies that are the stories that I wanted 7, 8, and 9 to be. It is very good fiction.
I'll have to read those then.
But now with Disney announcing this, I think fans are excited. But is there, at least between you and I, you know, in your opinion, what was your and I'm going to lead you in this questioning. Were you excited, or did you have trepidation based on what we got from the prequel trilogy?
I was all in, because I thought Lucas, you know, obviously being a technocrat and getting really excited with CGIing the originals and those falling off the rails so badly, I thought any take would be a refreshing take. I know a lot of people were worried about Disney turning it. I mean, they are marketing it and streaming in all kinds of different products, but they're worried about it being overkill. But I think I read early on when I saw the previews and trailers, I saw that it was an adult type take. It was more serious, more foreboding. And when I heard Abrams was attached, I knew it would be kind of exciting to watch from an action point of view. He doesn't do kiddie stuff. Totally excited, but definitely trepidatious about if it could be good or not. Because they're going to have to mix in the old actors who haven't been there forever with a bunch of people I never heard of before. And the last time we saw a bunch of people we had never heard of before, it was the Phantom Menace. And that didn't work out very well.
Now, that's a good point, though, because initially when it was announced, they said, you know, all the main cast is coming back. They're going to be in this movie. My initial thought was, why? Why do we need them? How can we go back, you know, tell the story later on after Luke? Or, and they kind of did this a little bit, especially with Luke Skywalker in Force Awakens, like only have them in for a small port. Like, you kind of get a passing of the torch sentiment, but they're not the main focus.
Yeah, and I think that's what Force Awakens struggled with the most. I'm assuming your audience has seen it, but I went in expecting the older actors to be the coolest part of seeing the film. And really, I kind of wish they would have just told a brand new story. I thought Han and Leia and Chewbacca being woven into it was a little awkward. And they're trying to stuff a lot of the old stuff in with trying to jumpstart a new thing, but then they're referring to a lot of New Hope themes. So to go back to your original question, I'm totally excited about it, but I was wondering how they're going to balance that. But I definitely was worried about if it would pay off. There's a lot of – when I showed up for Force Awakens, we can talk about what it was like to show up for that. I was incredibly stressed out. In fact, I didn't enjoy it at all because of how much pressure was on this film and on me to enjoy the film and to fight back. Am I liking this just because it's Star Wars? Is any of this actually working?
Yeah. And it's funny because I am usually the opposite way with films, where if it's really popular and people like it, I tend to dislike it. And then I say, am I disliking it just because other people are liking it?
It might be a contrarian.
I'm a contrarian, yeah. I mean, case in point, the previous weekend, I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2 for the first time and did not like it at all. But I can understand why people do like it. It just doesn't appeal to me. And I mean, that's where I am with Marvel movies we have discussed before, yeah, that I am just not that target audience. But going back to Star Wars, yeah, I was a little curious of, or, you know, cautious of how they were going to bring in the older actors. And I do think that telling a story, a new story, and then just having those characters in as, you know, more or less like, you know, Luke could have been like an Obi-Wan character, although eventually Han Solo went the Obi-Wan way. But one thing noticed when we watched it just, you know, a week ago at your place, the relationship between Han and Leia really, I'm kind of baffled. And again, maybe I'm missing something that I haven't seen because I have only seen the movie all the way through one time. I don't read up on films like I used to. But why, you know, it seemed like Han and Leia had not seen each other in quite some time.
Yeah.
And it's just like this weird, and then they get together and like, oh, our son, but there's no real backstory to their relationship or the fact that they're kids. Like, how long ago did Kylo Ren or Ben Solo go to the dark side? When did, you know, how long has Luke been missing?
Yeah, I think that's what this new movie is going to cover. And that was a problem, I think, a little bit with The Force Awakens for a lot of fans, is that there was a lot of incompleteness to it. So it just opens up a lot of doors and doesn't close them.
Which is
a little bit strange considering the other movies didn't even do that.
Yeah, which is a problem that I think most trilogies have. Like, you know, when the original Star Wars was made, no one knew there was going to be Empire and mm-hmm. Jedi. When you did Empire, you had a good idea that Jedi was going to follow it. And when you did the prequel trilogy, and I think the same way kind of like with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where you know you're doing three movies, so you have three movies of story spread out without having a real self-contained story in each individual film. So like you were saying with Force Awakens, where there's so many questions that we know we're going to get the answers to later on. So yeah, maybe it is a point of you just have to wait 4 years to get all the answers.
Yeah, they're actually requiring the audience to invest a little bit more than they probably should have, because they're not really answering every question on where Return of the Jedi to now left off. And then they're asking a bunch of things and leaving you hanging. So they're asking the audience to just kind of ride and kind of go with it. And my friends that are very critical of the movie say the movie's just full of plot holes. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, C-3PO has a red arm, and that's in a comic book. So like you have to pick up a comic book to go, yeah, why does he have a red arm? Well, he has a red arm in tribute to a droid that sacrificed, I believe it was a red droid that sacrificed his life for him.
Yeah. And
are you going to do that as a fan? Or are you mm-hmm. like, why does he have a red arm? You know, why is Leia barely in this movie? Why is Luke not talking? JJ, I think, did a little I think they rushed it a little bit. Because the more I watched, I've seen that movie like 10 times, it feels rushed. Like they're just trying to get to a lot of stuff. But they don't really resolve a lot of stuff in that movie.
Yeah, and I wonder, just sitting here while listening to you, I realized, you know, J.J. Abrams was involved with Lost. Lost had a lot of good questions and very few answers.
Yeah.
And very few logical answers. So is this a point where, yes, we can make this story and we can hint at things without, you know, having to actually pay off in the end? Or is it, or do they actually have three stories mapped out? Because I'm not followed the behind the scenes, so I don't know if there's the full arc is written, or if each director that comes in, each, you know, new screenwriter for each episode, if they're just taking basic plot points and piecing them together.
Yeah, I mean, it appeared like The Force Awakens was a way to kind of mix it all with the new, and then get rid of Han Solo as quick as possible, which in retrospect is probably the worst part of that movie. Where Harrison Ford doesn't want to continue to do it. He's in it. He's the best part of it. And then they have to get rid of him so they can advance the story. It's almost like they didn't have confidence that Adam Driver and Daisy Ridley could carry the movie all by themselves. But if you look at the original Star Wars, they put a bunch of nobodies in that movie, and they carried the movie all by themselves. So what I'm hoping with The Last Jedi is, now that we've seen the new characters established a little bit, have Luke be the linchpin and Leia of some of the nostalgic stuff, but they have to give those young bucks a lot more freedom to carry the story.
Yeah.
And not just keep going back to the same tones and themes from the other one. So it's almost like they're hedging a lot of money on the series, but they're not taking a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. And from all accounts, Rian Johnson is taking chances on this one. And the originals were all about taking chances. It was about Lucas making a movie for nothing that no one thought would work. And then getting really bold with Empire Strikes Back. And the only real conventional movie in the original trilogy is Return of the Jedi, which is by far my least favorite. And plays out exactly the way you would think. Except it has a fantastic ending act with Luke and his father, which is still really holds up. But the rest of it plays out the same. They're blowing up another Death Star. This time Lando's piloting. So they need to kind of stop going back to what works and try to create something new that works. That's what's holding this new series back.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem with Disney having it, where Disney right now, if you look at all the other things that they're doing, you know, Pixar did just release Coco, which apparently is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we also got Cars 3 this summer, and I think they're working on Toy Story 4. Like, they've become a sequel machine.
Yeah, Incredibles 2.
Incredibles 2, yeah. And then
I think Pixar's gone downhill, to be honest with you, creativity. Totally.
In the last 5-6 years, I couldn't tell you a good Pixar film that I've seen.
Yeah, Pixar is starting to meld with the... It's starting to become harder and harder to tell Pixar from another studio's family-friendly... Mm.
From like a blue...
You know, kind of tear-jerking story about overcoming the odds. Like, yeah. I thought WALL-E was really interesting, had a bad second half. Up had a great first half. They have a problem sometimes resolving their movies, but not to digress too much on Pixar. But yeah, it does become homogenous at a certain point, where if you don't take chances, you're kind of banking on these, they're not fools, they're fans, but these fans are going to go, okay, give me more, give me more, give me more.
Yeah.
Like, I know Star Wars fans, that they consume everything Star Wars. You have to be objective. Like, you have to say, this works, this doesn't work. I don't need to have every toy. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just concentrate on the characters that were the coolest or the ones that have the most interesting stories? And folks, I'm a collector as well. So you ever understood the need to kind of like everything that something is producing? Because then there's no quality control there. Mm-hmm. They could come out with a Star Wars movie that's completely ridiculous, like the holiday special. You would like that too. You know, and no one should like that.
But going back to my point, is like Disney is not even making, I don't want to say they're not making good films, but they're just doing live action versions of all their animated shows. Mm. They did Cinderella, they did Beauty and the Beast, Jungle Book, they have Lion King coming out, Aladdin. So with Force Awakens, it kind of it fell into that Disney remake trap of just taking A New Hope, substituting a few different pieces, but keeping most of the same beats, the same story. Basically, it's rebels are rising up against the Empire. Empire has a Death Star. We need to...
Yeah, that's the biggest problem with that movie. And what really redeems the movie from that particular problem, I think, is Daisy Ridley. I think her... And there's people that have problems with her being a character that can do everything. She can get in the William Falcon and fly it. She can go toe-to-toe with Kylo Ren.
But, I mean, that is a Star Wars staple. You watch Rogue One.
Pretty much.
Luke
Skywalker had a pretty good run in Star Wars with very little training.
Yeah.
And was able to go toe-to-toe and blow up the Death Star with...
Flying a spaceship is like driving a car. They're all pretty much the same. Yeah.
But what saves, I think, Force Awakens is the look of the movie, the design of the movie... The new characters I really enjoy, especially Daisy Ridley. I think it sets up something really interesting that we're about to go into. But if this next movie is more of the same, then we've confirmed it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to say with Disney with a $5 billion bet wasn't going to bring in the old cast to kind of get old farts like us there and then stick to some of the same things. But I was surprised how similar it was. It's really hard to defend that. But then again, Return of the Jedi had another Death Star too. So I just hope we do not see another Death Star that cannot be in the Last Jedi. If it does, I'm going to have to knock a point off the movie, no matter how much I like it.
Right. And I think I am afraid that this one is going to suffer from Empire-itis, where it being the middle movie, it's going to have kind of a darker tone and probably a somber ending, knowing that we're going to get the final resolution in 2 years. I'm hoping that they can at least make the story different enough so that it's not just, you know, I am waiting to see somebody get their hand cut off because that's a Star Wars staple. My biggest problem, I'm with you. I think Daisy Ridley did a fantastic job as Rey. I like that character. My biggest complaint in having watched the movie again recently is Finn. To me, Finn is in a completely different movie than everybody else. And you kind of brought it up earlier when we were talking about the prequel trilogy is, you know, Jar Jar was there for the humor, the comic relief. Yeah. I get that with Finn. Finn is the poor comic relief, like the forced humor in his character. He just does not, and this is me being an old you know, and being like, that's not my Star Wars. I want my Star Wars. I am hoping he's not as comedic, although I've heard things that have made me fear that he's going to be even more comedic in this one.
Yeah, Finn is the character I probably struggle with the most because I don't think John Boyega's performance is horrible, but it's definitely a little strong. I mean, he screams almost in the entire movie, delivers his lines a little too forcefully, and I just couldn't get into his performance at all. The only thing I like about his character is that he's an ex-stormtrooper or whatever, which is an interesting background or whatever. And he's a good character. Like, he's a very likable character. But his performance isn't nuanced. It's just like he's constantly yelling at everything around him. And I think he's got to tone it down a little bit in the next one.
Yeah, and then you have Poe. Oscar Isaacs. Is that his name? Isaac Oscar? Something like that. One of the two.
Yeah, Oscar Isaacs.
Who... I couldn't tell you anything about him other than he's a pilot.
Yeah, he was supposed to be killed in that one too. Was he? And apparently, I think JJ liked him so much he extended his role. They didn't do much with him.
No.
He has this big connection with BB-8. BB-8 kind of runs to him. That's kind of told very quickly. And I think JJ did a very piecemeal thing with this movie. Again, he had to work on a lot of the old characters, a lot of the new characters. A little too much going on. He took his time with Kylo Ren and Rey, and those pay off the best. But they're going to have to balance that better in the next one. And I hope Poe has a bigger role in this one. Captain Phasma was a big letdown for everybody. She looks great. She's basically incapacitated immediately in this movie and thrown into some kind of storage area or whatever. And we can see her, you know, in the next one, she has a bigger role, which I won't spoil because you haven't seen the trailers. But she's in the trailer for the new one. So I'm hoping that... these new characters get to shine a little bit. But then again, you run into this thing where, like, you've got Luke, you've got all these characters from The Force Awakens. How much time is Rian Johnson going to give all these people? Mm-hmm. Does it become overstuffed? That could be a real issue.
It could be. And that's another topic for when we discuss The Avengers.
That's got a big roster.
Yeah. But yeah, I am curious to see where this one goes. When I walked out of the theater after seeing Force Awakens, I was not impressed because to me it was just A New Hope redone or, you know, reheated. But I was curious to see where they would go next because I think they do have a good character with Rey, and I'm curious to see what her backstory is and where they go with that. Kylo Ren, I wish he would have kept the mask on, and that's mainly because
was his dark locks too distracting.
Adam Driver, he was just... Yeah.
I'm a little surprised by that because I really liked Adam Driver in that. I immediately liked him in that.
My comparison is Kylo Ren goes from Darth Vader to Anakin during the course of the movie because he goes from, like, the, you know, the imposing
badass
to whiny teenager. And I just got too much Hayden Christensen flashback when he took the mask off.
Yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. I don't think it was quite that bad, but I think he looked great. I liked him with the helmet off. That's when he could actually act.
And it did lead to a nice Saturday Night Live skit where they did the undercover boss.
Yeah, that was really good. But I actually admire Adam Driver a lot outside of that series as well. And I'm hoping they expand his role. You're right, though. I mean, you take a little bit of a risk when you show him having temper tantrums and kind of whining about how he's not as strong as Rey or whatever in certain scenes where he comes off as kind of an emo character. And I'm not sure, especially older fans, really wanted to see that. They want that monotype Vader character. And he does get introduced very well.
Very well, yeah. And I think it's that prequel trilogy... what I'm looking for, that stench of the prequel trilogy, that when he comes off as Anakin, it's just a reminder of how bad those films were, how bad the acting was, and now we're getting it again.
Yeah, it could be a script thing too. I'm hoping, because Rian Johnson is an excellent writer, and I don't know, did you ever see Looper?
I did, I loved Looper.
That was my favorite movie of the year.
Yeah.
So when I read that he was writing it and directing it, I couldn't have been happier. So I think a lot of that sometimes, Now, if he's given a great script and he doesn't come off as very convincing, then we got a problem with him in that role. I mean, I think The Force Awakens will end up being one of the weaker ones of these three. I'm just guessing based on the weight Disney had, mm-hmm. the conservative route they went telling the story. And to me, it did feel rushed. They acquired it and they kind of put it out right after they acquired Lucasfilm. They've had some time with this one. They've had the template in place, the actors in place. But Force Awakens, I can see all kinds of criticisms. I think Han's death is the worst part of that movie by far. You saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah.
And it wasn't done very well. And I've always said Han can't have a death like that. He's got to have a hero's death. He's got to fly the Millennium Falcon into Starkiller.
Yeah, his death means nothing. It just happens. And then we move on. There's no...
Yeah, and then Kylo Ren ends up getting away anyway. Sure, they blow up the base, but, you know, that could have been done anyway based on what they were doing already at the base.
Yeah,
it's not enough of a payoff, and I think Mark Hamill made a great point. He's like, why wasn't Luke there to see it or Leia? And I thought, I'm not sure if he said and Leia, but it's true. Like, with Chewbacca witnessing his death, that was the gut punch at the party. When we watched it, we're like, Chewbacca cries out. That's a real gut punch.
And then Chewbacca... is over
right by Leia, yeah, which is just horrific. But I really think, and obviously Luke's on an island, so he wasn't going to be there. But if Luke could have been there, or Leia could have been there, that makes the whole movie just your gut's going to bottom out. But JJ botched it.
Yeah,
I mean, should have asked for that or had it written.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it since we've compared Force Awakens to New Hope. You look at when Obi-Wan is killed, where he sacrifices himself to get.
It's incredible.
Everybody out. Like you said, it's a hero's death. It's I'm sacrificing myself for the good of the rest of the group. Han is just sucked in by a bad acting teenager. And then...
Well, he goes out there to turn his son and get him out of Starkiller Base. And he ends up getting run through by a sword and falling off a catwalk. That's not much of a hero's death.
And it goes back to my... point earlier about what is the relationship between Han and Kylo or Ben, because how long has it been since they've seen each other, since they've talked? Why would Han, and maybe it's a parental thing, maybe, you know, something that I can't relate to, where you see your kid going and you just hope for the best when you say, you know, come back to us, and Han loses.
You're right. What made him think he could accomplish that?
Yeah. Because if Kylo Ren had been gone for 2 weeks, you'd be like, okay, come back. If it's been 2-3 years, you know, what is...
No, it's likely Kylo Ren is the one that destroyed Luke's temple.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And in that situation, I don't think Han Solo was involved in any of that. So really, his son went completely psycho and he decided to just show up, which if anything, is just going to piss him off even more. Mm-hmm. And predictably, he doesn't last more than 2 minutes after... I mean, Leia probably would have had a better chance trying to talk him off. Mm-hmm. I was always curious as to why they called him Ben.
Well, I'm guessing after Kenobi, but...
But was Han Solo close to Obi-Wan? He made fun of him in the first one and kind of dismissed everything he was saying as a bunch of BS. Yeah. And Leia certainly wasn't close to Ben. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Although, did they even meet?
Well, maybe his ghost figure had come to Leia and said, you are pregnant with child. You will name the child Ben.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I get it if it was Luke's kid, but I never really understood that, except that was another nod to the past.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, because I know when Disney bought Lucasfilm that they said the books now are not canon.
Mm-hmm.
In the books, Luke and or Han and Leia have twins.
Well, they have three kids?
I think they eventually have three, but I know they had twins at one point. So, again, you know, there's that speculation that Rey will be the twin sister. I don't see that one happening, but somehow she's going to tie into the Skywalker family.
Oh, yeah. I think she's related to Luke. I will say one thing, and I know you're asking a lot about Disney, and there's been a lot of criticism about Disney in general because, you know, they own Pixar and Marvel and everything, and some of the stuff is kind of – some of it's looking the same and sounding the same. But if you look at what they've done with the theme parks and the mythology of this, and I'm a huge Marvel fan – and I think they've knocked everything out of the park. Is it a template? Sure, it's a template. So are the comic books. Mm-hmm. And I've always referred to Star Wars movies now and Marvel movies as comic books. So they are not meant to be radically different. They're meant to be a little bit more of, they're serials. Mm-hmm. Like when George Lucas and Spielberg grew up watching serials and you'd watch Batman with Adam West, they're not going to reinvent the wheel every time they make a new one. It's going to be like, well, I saw the 17th Star Trek episode or Batman episode, and it's like Batman's on another thing with a chainsaw coming at him, and he's only got 5 seconds to get out of it. Well, that's what it is. And yeah, if you do 50 of them, people are going to get sick of it. But I don't think people are getting sick of Star Wars. And I think the proof is that people are coming back. Like, people are not turning out for DC movies because they haven't established something that people like. Now, you can argue that Disney has made something that people like and they won't let go of it. They just keep replicating it. But I've argued that serial entertainment has been around forever. And that's why, and for me, the way they brought Marvel to life and the fact they're reinvigorating the Star Wars fan base, it's not all hype. If it was all hype, I don't think this movie would have the hype around it that it does. We'll see what it does number-wise. I think it's going to be over $2 billion.
And I think, I mean, one, I think Star Wars fans, Star Wars has that fandom, fan base that DC, to compare with DC right now, that DC doesn't have. Like, DC, you know, Batman was popular, but Batman has never been, even though it's been around much longer, and it is a cultural, you know, I can't think of words right now, but it's
occasionally been a phenomenon.
Yeah, cultural phenomenon. But Star Wars has had a much deeper fan resonance, partly due to the lack of Star Wars films. Whereas, you know, Batman has had the TV show and comic books, and Star Wars was just three films, and fans wanted more. But yeah, and DC has butchered it. I mean, Man of Steel and Superman versus Batman, just the tone of Superman did not match what people, what Superman is. So I think that instantly turned people off.
You can make an argument that I would love it if they did copy 1978 Superman.
Yeah.
Like, it would be nice if they went back and did one of those again and then get their footing down and then take some chances. They're taking chances and they're all failing. I think one thing too is that Star Wars gets a lot of criticism for overkill. Definitely when you talk about the merchandising mixed with the commercials, mixed with the movies. However, if you look at it with Star Wars, we're talking about, what, 8, 9, 10 movies, whatever it is. That's over 40 years.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of products. That's not a lot of entertainment.
And I'm going to say, as someone who grew up with all the action figures, bed sheets, clothes, you name whatever merchandise, I had it. To me, it's not an overkill of merchandise, although I do question when I see, you know, like a Hyundai commercial and they're showing like a car and a walking by, and I'm like, so is Ray going to be driving up in a new Nissan?
Auto-assisted.
Yeah, you know, it's like some of the
that would bother me.
Some of the merchandise, cross-platforming merchandising is a little crazy, but if Star Wars wants to slap their name on something, I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to criticize that aspect because I know that has nothing to do with the actual content that they're putting out in the film. I think the content, again, goes back to, as fans, and this is the negative aspect of fandom, where part of us thinks we own part of Star Wars. Like, oh, this, you know, Star Wars inspired my life, what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I'm going to tell you what you need to do to appeal to me. Instead of realizing this has to appeal to the largest audience possible. And that's why you get a character like Jar Jar or a humorous Finn or, you know, everything that will appeal to more people, not just the one person sitting in the audience, not the person sitting to the left of them. Like, and I think fans need to, that's where the critical part of fandom comes in is, oh, I didn't like this, so it was wrong, and it would have been better had you done this and this. And I know I've said that on the show several times, where, and I'm not trying to say I know better, but I'm going to say, as a fan, this is the part I didn't like. But if everyone else did, going back to Guardians of the Galaxy, and not for me, but I can now totally understand why people like it. And when people say, I really love this movie, and it's because of this, I can be like, oh, okay, just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, as I've gotten older, the great debate is whether or not you have to look at who they're making these movies for. And my old thing with Star Wars is that the movie was made, George Lucas will say it was made for a family audience. I think it was told in a way that everyone could enjoy it. And when he strays away from that and he makes it too kiddie, or in the case of Rogue One, which is a really dark story, some people didn't like that. As long as they're explicit about what they're doing, I can tell when Rebels and Clone Wars comes up, it's not for me. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to watch a Star Wars movie and have it betray the tone of the series and go, oh, this is a whole bunch of jokey. Like with the Porgs, I'm in love with the Porgs. I love the way they look. I think kids are going to eat it up. The toys are flying off the shelves.
That's Porgs, P-O-R-G, not porn.
Not porn.
It's not the Star Wars porns.
I love Porgs, but what if the Porgs are like the Ewoks and they're just joking up every single scene? I'd be like, okay, now we've gotten too much. But the reason the Porgs are in there, we know why the Porgs are in there. The Space Penguins are in there so that little kids that are like knee high can go freak out when they see one, when they don't get anything else that's going on. That's probably why Jar Jar was invented. Mm. Like, okay, they're talking about political blockades and whatever nonsense was in the original Phantom Menace. But there's this guy with floppy ears that makes all kinds of jokes and falls down all the time. That to me doesn't work so much. You can only do it in limited amounts. I just hope it goes. You might say you may not want the next one to be as dark. I want it to go very dark.
I think it's all
take a chance.
Yeah, it's going to depend on where they're going with the stories after the third film.
Yeah.
You know, is that going to be the end? Are we going to pick up with, you know, a live action series or a next movie trilogy, whatever the story is? I just want a cohesive story that gives me the answers to the questions that you've laid out in front of me
before. I mean, I'll call it they open up too many doors. My friends are critical, call it plot holes. Mm-hmm. The Force Awakens is unsatisfying in a lot of ways. It doesn't complete a lot of little storylines. If this new one can at least close more than it opens, I think we're in good shape. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Again, we're recording this the day before Last Jedi comes out. Word of mouth so far, and it's from one mouth, has been very positive. I saw a few other reviews trickle in online today. I did not read them because, again, trying to stay
spoiler-free. The blurbs are spoiling stuff.
I know tomorrow, before going to see it, I will probably try to stay off social media at all costs.
It's a blackout for me.
Yeah. But I think Disney is on the right path. I think they have a lot here to work with, but I do have fears of what is going to come in the next 5 to 10 years. And that will be next week's episode when we discuss the future of Star Wars and Disney and probably give spoiler thoughts on Last Jedi. So make sure you go out and see The Last Jedi this week, because who else isn't going to go see it this week? It's going to make $300 million in like 4 days.
See it. We will tell you what we think.
So other than that, Eric, do you have any other last comments on Star Wars up until Last Jedi?
Well, I will say that The Last Jedi, these movies are every 2 years. Rogue One was pretty good. It wasn't great for me. I haven't been this excited for a movie in a long time. Force Awakens was all about, oh, we're getting one. We haven't had one in a long time. So that level of excitement was higher. But because of what people are saying about this movie, and I have read the Rotten Tomatoes aggregate and some of the blurbs, and I didn't want to do it. Within the last week, I've gotten to a fever pitch on this one. And I enjoy that feeling. I love having high expectations. So, and I love this director / writer. So I'm going to go in there expecting something great, and I hope I get it.
And I'm going in, knowing me, I'm going in with tapered expectations so that if it doesn't, because over the summer I went into Baby Driver with high expectations and came out entertained, but meh. Whereas this one I'm going with, okay, Force Awakens, just don't give me Empire Strikes Back 2. And so I'm hoping to be entertained. But one thought that did just cross my mind, that because Disney owns Marvel and Star Wars now, Star Wars to me has always been a May release. You know, every other six films had come out at May. Now, because of the Disney schedule, Star Wars movies come out in December. Does this affect, does this play any role in your fan base of Star Wars?
I think it's brilliant. I think to make Star Wars a Christmas event is, I don't know who thought of that. I don't know if it was a timing thing where they said, well, that's what we'll do and we'll do it again. Brilliant. To own the month of December like this, I love it. It's like a holiday on top of the holidays. And I'm taking the day off. I've never taken a day off for a Star Wars movie in my entire life. So I'm not calling in sick. I'm legitimately got vacation time, and I'm going to this movie.
Will you be hitting up the cantina beforehand? At least come in villainy?
I will be doing that this weekend, I think. But not tomorrow.
Okay. Well, yes, that concludes this week's episode. Again, we'll be back next week with more thoughts on Star Wars to close out the year of 2017. And as always, question everything, do something positive. May the Force be with you.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.